Welcome to Dream Big with Jill Jack, a show that will inspire, educate, and encourage you to break down your barriers and follow your heart. Here's your host, Jill Jack, on Empower Radio.
Hello, Dream Big listeners. The power of habit. I am really happy to be talking about that today because I'm in a funk. You know, I'm in Michigan. It's like right before spring. Is it warm? Is it cold? We don't know. And I have that Polish body that just loves to hang on to food during the winter months. So I've got to get myself back into a gym and all that. And I know it is the power of habit and things that are good for me. You know, you have to focus on really trying to make, and I don't say try very often, so let's change that. I like to focus on making good things happen for myself and so I can share my story with others as well. Today, we have an incredible story to tell, an incredible person as a guest on Dream Big Radio. His name is Kyle Winkfield. I hope I'm saying it right. I have a wonderful publicist who has been working with me on so many projects, and she recommended that I look him up and have him on my show. The minute I read his bio, the minute I read his story, I was like, oh, yes, this is a great way to have a wonderful week. So without further ado, Kyle, how are you today?
I'm wonderful. How are you doing, Jill?
I am doing fantastic. You know, I was reading some of the things that Amy, we have a fellow friend in Amy, my publicist, and you were a medical miracle, they say. I know my husband was a preemie when he was born, and he weighed all of 3 pounds, and they didn't know if he'd make it. Now, in your case, it was said that you had a heart defect. Is that true? That is true.
That's true. Yeah, they said I had a heart defect, and they were, as the story is told to me, because of course I don't remember any of it.
Right.
You know, because I was born, and then 3 weeks later my chest was caving in, and I was turning blue.
Oh my God!
And they rushed me to National Capital Children's Hospital out here in the Washington D.C. area.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically prepped my parents for the following. Probably won't make it, but if he does, he will be deaf. And back then, they used the R word, but mentally challenged.
Mm-hmm.
And don't expect much out of him. He won't be able to do much if we can turn this thing around, but we're going to give it our best.
Wow. I have goosebumps you just telling me that. So what happened? I mean, tell me how you went from that diagnosis. You know, when did they see change? When did you, I mean, obviously then you were a fighter from the beginning.
Yeah, well, I think that that the creator wired me to be tenacious or to stand up one more time. And he broke me in really fast with life, right?
Obviously, right out of the gate. Oh my gosh.
Right out of the gate. And I think that I only have my mother and my father's experience for that. And I'm a parent now, so I understand how devastating it must be to get that kind of diagnosis about your child. They just came into the world. But I know that my mom is a deep, deep woman of faith. And I know that she prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed. And no matter what the doctors were telling her the prognosis was, she would just look at them in calmness and in peace, a peace that surpasses all understanding. As she said, he's going to live.
Oh.
And they're like, okay, kind of crazy.
No, I totally believe in prayer, and I totally believe in faith. You know, I was going to ask if that was, you know, part of it, obviously all of it. And so as a child, did you have any ailments that they said that you would have, or they all just went away? I mean, what?
No, that was a great question. It was the exact opposite. So here I was, someone who was incredibly physically, athletically active, had enjoy all the intellectual pursuits from chess to mathematics, enjoyed reading. Apparently, as soon as I could learn to read, I became what one would refer to as a voracious reader. And I just kept reading. I mean, none of the stuff that they said was going to be my fate, was my fate. And so as my mother taught me, she said, hey, the great physician said that you will be all that and more. And so I was like, okay, Mom, all right. And then, you know, I'd go off and do my thing. But
did you?
My mother was correct.
So I have a question for you, voracious reader. I love to read, but I still read books. Are you an iPad guy or do you read books still? Like turn the page kind of guy?
That I love that you ask, because I am a turn the page kind of guy, right in the margin, dog ear.
Me too.
I'm staring at 6 books that I got out on my reading table, and I've got all these little post-it notes on the page that flag either quotes or references that I want to go back to. And you know, we've all been there where we've read something great in a book and then we didn't flag it accordingly.
Right.
And we're like, daggone it.
Oh, I have it. Yeah. All my books, the underlining, you name it. It's just so inspirational. So, you know, if you can tell the listeners what you do now for a living, and I know that's like kind of like, okay, so how'd you get there? But, you know what you do now and what path you had to go through to get to where you are today.
So the quick response is, someone says, what are you doing? I just say, I'm in the financial services industry with a very unique approach in that I help people find money that they're giving away unknowingly and unnecessarily.
Wow. We could all use you.
And as a
Definitely.
Right. A lot of people. And I said, you know, what's interesting about the financial services industry, when you start thinking about investments and retirement planning and all that, there's really only 2 ways a financial professional can help you. Number one, they can find you better products, get a better rate of return. But we all know that that means high risk, because the greater the risk, the greater the reward. At least that's what people believe.
Right.
And so the second way that someone could help you is help you be more efficient. And at Finley Alexander, that's where we focus. We like to help people be more efficient, because when they come to see us, they're either 5 or 10 years away from retirement, in retirement, or have been in retirement for quite some time. So they're at a place where losing money or going up and down and taking on all that risk isn't really where they are any longer. They need that money. They're vulnerable. They need that money to be able to support the lifestyle that they deserve and they've earned. And so when they come to us, it's all about efficiency.
Now, did you always know this about money? Were you always capable of managing your money? Were you always, you know, insightful? Did you ever have a downtime? Because
what?
I know as an artist, I'm an artist, and, you know, I've been from like zero to lots of money to back to zero again. And I grew up, you know, rich. My dad was a doctor, but as a, you know, artist myself, it hasn't been that simple, or that I shouldn't say easy, because it wasn't easy for my father. He worked hard. But, you know, were you always like insightful that way?
Well, no. Number one, no. I grew up in the household where my parents never, and when I say never, never talked about money, never spoke about it. It wasn't a topic around the table. It was, if it did come up, when money topics came up in our household, there was a bunch of tension. There were arguments. There were fights. And my father's 2 favorite phrases, until we connected and I became his guide,
Yay.
Was no. And we cannot afford it. And,
oh,
and
he
I
must know my husband.
Like, so I used to be one of those people that used to be like, man, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. But I know one thing. My dad hates his job, so I don't want to go get a job somewhere where I'm going to hate it. Number two, I don't want to fight about money. And my dad had worked so hard to send me and my brothers to a independent private school that's real high end in the Washington, D.C. area, the Bullis School. And I went there from the age of 9 years old, 10 years old, till I graduated. And I go, you know, if you got listeners all over the United States, which you certainly do, they may or may not understand the difference between a high end independent school. I'm familiar with some of Detroit's high end schools, and Michigan's high end schools. So one of them is like the Detroit Country Day School or something
right,
like that.
Right.
So Bullis is at that caliber or higher. And I was around CEOs' kids, and I went to school with 3 billionaires. There's 3 billionaires' kids who went to my school.
Wow. Yeah.
And I remember sitting, I grew up in a townhouse that was 1,900 square feet with, we didn't have a garage. We had parking spaces. And I thought that was normal. And then I go to this school in Potomac, Maryland, and I realize, my parents ain't got nothing. And I just remember thinking, I had a great childhood. It was very bucolic. I mean, it was, if I could go back in time and relive my childhood, I would. So I don't even thinking it was horrible. It was awesome. I had these amazing grandparents who live in the South, and we go spend every summer with them.
Oh, I love it.
And they did well. Mm-hmm. And so my parents, my dad worked hard, sent me there. And I remember coming home one day after I had spent the night at one of my buddy's houses. And I said to my dad, I said, Dad, what's a CEO? And he was like, what? And I said, what's the CEO? He's like, I don't know. And it was just kind of like, you know, get out of my face. And so then I remember going back to my buddy's house for a sleepover. And it's like his kids, my buddy's dad had like three kids, my buddy and two other siblings or two other children. And then I sat with him at the dinner table one night and I said, Mr. So-and-so, what do you do? He was so happy that somebody cared about what he did, because I guess his family was like, whatever, that's dad. He talked to me. You would have thought he was missing friends, because he talked to me. It was like 7 o'clock. I didn't go to bed till like 11:30, and I could have stayed up. I was falling asleep. I could have stayed up for two more days listening to him.
Wow.
And I thought, man, you know what? I want to own a business. I want to be a CEO, whatever that means. And they always had money, and he was so generous and always calm, and everybody loved him. His employees loved him. His kids loved him. His wife loved him. And I was like, hey, man, I want that kind of life. And he was like, Kyle, do you know what investments are? I said, what's that?
Wow.
And he was all good for kinds of investors. So that was kind of my foray into at least someone planting the seed. But it didn't mean I managed money the right way, because as a child and a teenager, and then as a young adult in college, you know, I was the broke college kid. You know, I still have the quote unquote PTSD from putting the debit card in the machine, mm-hmm. and remember seeing decline.
Isn't it a worse feeling in the universe? Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I still joke my wife when we go to Target, and I look at the Target cashier, and I put my debit card in, and I go, whew, all right, boy, I thought it was going to come back to cry.
Don't you wonder how many prayers have been said over a debit card machine? I know for myself as a single mom, I was always like sweating, you know, just that feeling of just dread. And I do thank God every time, like, I'm like, oh, yeah, I have money. It's okay. Calm down. You know, it's going to clear. You know what I think is really beautiful from your story as well is that you you know, your father, although he didn't know the definition of a CEO, he put you in a place where, had he not, you might not have experienced any of that. Obviously, you were a very inquisitive person. And, you know, so he put you there so that you could see this other world. And then you just ran with it, which is just beautiful. So in your 20s, you know, you struggled. Where did you decide at that point to be like, okay, this isn't work. I don't want to, you know, financially struggle. Is it just because of what you did in college and you worked through it?
Oh, no. College was like the pregame to something worse.
Oh.
So I get out of college. Okay, so this is how this works. I remember I went to the University of Maryland, College Park. So, you know, for the listeners, you know, like, oh, he's a TERP. Yeah, I'm a TERP. I just never really got into my college. I mean, it's a place I went, because the University of Maryland is so large. It's like going to school in a city.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, it's a city in and of itself. Like, it's an ecosystem. If you don't have your friends, I was a transfer. So I didn't establish bonds as a freshman, because I was at another college prior to that in Emmitsburg, Maryland. So at any rate, when I remember junior year, they had these job fairs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And your senior year, you job fair. And so I got my resumes, and I was a pretty driven and ambitious guy in college. I had always, every summer, I had two jobs. I had a paid, emphasis on paid, internship, because a lot of internships mean you're working for free.
Right.
I had a paid internship during the week. And on the weekend, I had a job working, making money. So I would work at, like, the Sam's Club in Gaithersburg, Maryland as a cashier, and I would just work double shifts all weekend, and then boom, back on the metro down to my, you know, business job or internship making money. And I remember putting my resume, and I had done so many internships. because I even did paid ones during the school year.
Good for you.
Internships are great because they help you realize what you don't want to do. Some people say, yeah, it's something I might want to do. No, I had enough introduction to that stuff. I didn't want to do that. And I remember standing outside of Coalfield House with my resumes, and I had this thought. And this thought freed me down the road that I walked, the one that I'm on now. And it was, what is so different about me and all the rest of these guys and gals walking in here with these resumes? These corporations and companies that are recruiting or hiring people have a quota. They're going to get a stack of resumes. They're going to go through them, and they're going to pick however many and move on. Next thing you know, I'm going to be on this track of middle management, trying to work my way up, and good Lord forbid I start to have these thoughts of maybe I want to go and start a company and something like that, but then I've already made all these financial commitments. I got a family. I've got a house. I got a McMansion and got the Mercedes in the driveway, and I'm trapped. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, and I remember sitting out there, I put my resumes in a manila folder. I put them in a green trash receptacle, took my tie off, put the tie in the trash receptacle, turned around, walked to the parking garage, cranked up my car, drove back to my apartment, changed my clothes to workout clothes, and went and did a workout and said, I'm not going to go look for a job. Forget that.
Whoa.
I'm going to go do something. I'm going to do something else. And it was interesting because I get out of college and the first real job I had, I mean, people are going to laugh. I sprayed bugs for Orkin.
Hey, we love you guys, though. They're awesome.
but here I got this college degree and stuff, and then I'm spraying bugs for Orkin. But my mother, loving me to pieces, always printed out my resume and said, take these with you. You never know whose house you'll spray.
I love your mother already.
She's awesome. So she's always been my biggest fan. I mean, my biggest fan now is my wife, and it's nice to have three incredible women in your life, my grandmother, my mother, and my wife, who rival for who's Kyle's biggest fan. And then I got my sons who are like, no, daddy's a rock star. He's a superhero. He's the man. And I was like, this is awesome. Like, I just come home and then everybody's like, yay, daddy. So
that's beautiful. Support is so important to have in your life.
Massive.
You know? Yeah.
Massive. And I'm going to tell you, I wouldn't be where I am today, and I wouldn't be able to go where I'm headed if it was not for key support players in my life. And I think what happened was, like, Brady's bus will work, and then, I get to this one house that's massive. I'm spraying the house, and the wife comes out. She's like, well, I didn't spray the house yet. She comes out. She's like, her stomach is massive because she's pregnant. Her nose, she's like on the end, so her nose kind of swelled up, and it was red. And she was like, hi, please don't spray. I'm pregnant. I said, I got it. It's real obvious. And I folded up the glue traps, and it was a new house. And I was like, you don't need to spray it for a new house. But anyways, I put the glue traps down, and she just wouldn't stop talking to me. She just followed me around the house. So what do you do? Did you go to college? Are you in college? I was like, okay, lady. Yes, I went to college. What was your focus? And she started talking, and I said, mathematics and economics and stuff like that. And she said, oh, really? My husband is the branch VP or something for American Express Financial Advisors. Do you have a resume? I said, in fact, I do.
My so mom told me to put it in my car.
Right.
That's awesome.
Here I am. I go, matter of fact, I do. So I gave her the resume. She faxes it to her husband. Her husband calls me and says, hey, would you like to come in for an interview? So unbeknownst to him, I'd known the grind or the drill at these big logoed captive Salesforce based financial companies where they're just trying to sell you as much of their financial products as they can. They don't necessarily and they don't necessarily care if what they sell is in your best interest. What they care about is selling as much of it as possible. And so I get hired there, and he says, now here's what you got to stack leads. And I just looked at him, I said, I know the drill. You got a headset? And he gives me the leads, and everybody else is just running their mouth. And, you know, most sales guys, most people in financial services, and, you know, they're kind of lazy because nobody wants to make the calls. And I just sat down, focused, and I said, all right, I'm going to do like 100 dials a day. Next thing you know, I'm doing well, but I'm not happy, you know, there. And I met somebody there who was like, man, we should go on our own. Blah, blah. I said, yeah, let's do it. So we stepped out on our own, and then we did our thing together. And then he went one direction. I kept in this on this this course, and it's just been a, it's been an incredible journey, a lot of valleys. At one point, things had gotten so bad that I was living in an apartment in Silver Spring, Maryland, and incidentally, that's where I met my wife. And she lived in the apartment right below me.
Wow.
So talk about the irony of God putting people in your life.
No
hey, you never
kidding.
Know, they might be right in front of you. And it got so bad that, that I was having a hard time with cash flow. This is okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's because my business partner at the time, he was mismanaging some things, and, you know, it was hurting me.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, man. So I got a notice on my door. You know, I got home one day and there was a notice on my door, and I hope none of your listeners have ever had to deal with this, but this is when you get a notice on your door talking about you don't pay your rent, you got to be gone in 30 days.
Wow.
You're broken. Now, what broke me even further was I had like negative $2,000 in my checking account.
Oh man. Ouch.
So I'm like, I don't know how to pay the rent. And I'm thinking, like, my parents ain't got any money. And I've always had great relationships, though, with my buddies. And one of my buddies owned a trucking company. And I said, listen, hey, man, I need some help. He said, what? I said, I can't pay my rent. I don't got any money. So I kind of need, like, $5,000 because I need to go bring my account back to zero. I need to pay $1,300 in rent. And I need a little bit of cushion so, you know, my lights and stuff don't get cut off. And so he was like, no problem. And he,
nice
and
friend.
He, you know, he puts it, oh, he's great. So, you know, he said, no problem. I got it, you know, and I'm good. And we got things going and I'm feeling good. And I meet my wife. And then that's literally upon meeting her. That's when, I mean, a late president said that his life began when he met his wife. And then I felt like I understood what that meant when I met Ashley.
That's
and I
so
said, man,
beautiful.
This is awesome. And then once again, she meets me at a low point, right?
Mm-hmm. Which tells you a lot about her character, you know?
Yeah. So you asked, did I master cash flow? No, because when I meet her, she said, what's wrong with you? She's known me a week. I said, she knew me a week. And I said, look, I got to talk to you real quick. See, at this point, when you're busted out, you might as well just be honest. Don't lie to anybody, because just tell them the truth. Let me just tell her I ain't got any money. I'm broke. My laptop failed on me, and my business partner's a moron. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I do know this. I got four opportunities that if I could just get my laptop to work, I could make probably $20,000. So she heard that. She says, well, you need a laptop? I said, yeah, but I can't buy one. This young lady has known me a week. Goes and uses a credit card and orders a Dell laptop for me. The rest is history.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
my God.
Wow.
You know, I feel like we could, I wish I had a longer show, because I want to hear more and more, but we're going to have you back. But what I do want to say is throughout all this, the main message here is that you were always in the right place at the right time, but you were smart enough to act on it. So a lot of times, you know, like how you said that pregnant woman was kind of like just yapping her head off around you. A lot of times I feel like we get those messages and we just ignore them, and we find them annoying, and we just kind of blow them off. You didn't, and you listened and you acted. So, you know, if you can tell anyone out there, because we only have 2 minutes left, what would be the best advice for someone who is just extremely down on their luck, can't really see the light of day, doesn't know where to go, maybe has negative $2,000 in their account? What would you, in a short but sweet message,
okay,
what would your biggest message be to them?
Great question. I think the first place I'm going to start is that, you know, when you're down and out like that, it's really easy to believe the new narrative in your head that your life sucks and you ain't nothing and it's never going to get any better.
Mm-hmm.
Or and stuff like that. First of all, newsflash, it could get worse. Hopefully it won't. But more importantly, don't buy into that narrative. You're greater than you possibly could ever imagine. And you've got to let the valleys do what they're supposed to do. Success is not a success is not a teacher. It's a reward. The valley is the teacher. The pain is the teacher. Let it instruct. Extrapolate from that. What is the lesson? What should I be learning? There's myriads of lessons inside of there. And understand that the valley and the pain that you're going through, that's called tuition. Life likes to charge a nice tuition fee. Nobody likes to pay it. But let me tell you, you want to get to the top, you're going to have to pay it. There's no way around it. You cannot bypass. There is no bypass on the pain of traffic, the pain of traffic in life. Sit in it. Deal with it. Rise from it. That's where you learn.
Oh,
okay, from
my
that,
God.
Develop the habits.
You are amazing. Do you write? Have you written a book? And we're running out of time. Have you written any books on this?
I have a heart for a writer and a teacher. So yes, I would say that there will be a book coming. I'm just trying to figure out what would I say because I've got so much on my mind.
Well, you
and
just
my heart
did. And from a professor told me, just write every day for 15 minutes. Don't even think about it. Just start writing every day for 15 minutes and you will end up with a book. So I want you to do that. I want you to promise me you'll do that. And then also, I head out to DC about twice a year and I'd love to take you to lunch when I get there. My brother lives right outside DC. And so I would just, you're such an inspiration. Is there a place where people could find more information about you, a website or something like that, that they could, you know, connect?
Yes. If you want to connect with me, you can go to FinleyAlexander.com. So that's FinleyAlexander.com. And KyleWingfield.com will be up shortly. But for now, as at the conclusion of this podcast, that's the best way to get a hold of me.
Well, thank
you. Always just email. You can email me, too. So it's my name, first name at FinleyAlexander.com. I will be responsive. I love hearing from folks.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. And you are truly an inspiration. You've turned my day around this morning, and I'm sure you will turn many, many people's heads today and give them hope. So thanks for being on our show and really, really, investing in dreaming big. Thank you.
My pleasure, Jill.